This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shane Gallagher and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin. And I'm joined from Whakatane by Moira Karatai. Kia ora, Moira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. I saw you briefly this week.
Yes, you did. Twice. So I've been in Dunedin this week as I started my new job as a lecturer for the University of Otago in the Management School. And I delivered my first lecture, which was so amazing.
How did it go?
It went really well. I had about 100 students in the room who were third-year students for the bachelor's and first-year students for the master's. And I spoke to them about the actual meaning of the word Māori and about kaitiakitanga and about the qualities of a kaitiaki and what they need to be the people who fix the rights of, the wrongs rather, of all of the environmental damage that our generation and those before us have caused. Yeah, that it was amazing.
That sounds so good, and there'll be 100 people who will be much better off for having heard that, engaged with that.
Yeah, they were amazing, and the depth of their thinking, their emotional intelligence, everything about them blew my mind. We're in good hands if they are representative of the future.
That is good to hear. And who are we introducing today?
It is my very great pleasure to introduce Lucky Hawkins. Lucky was on the show a couple of weeks ago. She had recently survived the cyclone that has caused so much damage around the East Coast, down into the Hawke's Bay and up into the Bay of Plenty, and then also over into the Waikato around the Taupo area. Lucky is a student with Otago Polytech studying for a Doctorate of Professional Practice and an Education Manager for Te Whare Wānanga o Aotearoa. Kia ora, Lucky. Thanks for joining us today.
Kia ora. Thank you very much for inviting me.
So how welcome. Are you going? How are you going? Welcome back.
Kia ora is probably the only word that I can use. I can't really think too deep into anything because we're still a little bit overwhelmed. Just trying to get the basics to live, a bed, blankets, all of those sort of things. It seems really trivial, but yeah, it really is just getting back to the basics, making sure we've got everything that we need, being able to go to work. I've only been to work for a few days this week, trying to get enough clothes, buying all of those sorts of things. It has been hard, but we're moving forward. We're just taking one step at a time.
Are you able to move around the district much now?
So I've actually relocated back to Gisborne with my mother. Mum's almost 80, and she was actually in the flood with me in Wairoa. Building that I was staying in, it has been yellow stickered, but the council said it's actually red. But until they do an in-depth inspection, they'll probably red sticker it. One thing that I did find when we were in the building for the last 10 loads that we did, just salvaging and dumping, trying to help the owner out, was that the silt, when the doors are shut, it is just so toxic. When you open the doors, it's just really hard to move around, to breathe. And we really had to get to a point where I said to my mum, I think enough is enough, and we just had to walk away. So We did 10 loads from Gisborne to Wairoa and return, so 200 k's a day, which doesn't sound like much, but for myself and an almost 80-year-old lady trudging through mud daily, we did 13 loads altogether, sorry. It was really hard, but we wanted to walk away with some dignity and at least dispose of our personal things. And that was really about not really wanting the public to see our personal belongings. And what we did leave there, we were happy to say, you know, hey, we have done our best. We're absolutely exhausted. I'm still really, really tired today. But I'm hoping my new bedroom suite tomorrow will bring me a little bit of joy and have a good night's sleep. So I've been sleeping on the floor at Mum's for the last, how long have we been here? Week and a half. So, of course, Mum's house wasn't equipped for visitors. So, yeah, really looking forward to a good night's sleep.
Did you get any support, any help in clearing out your personal belongings? Was the army there to support you? Like, did you guys have to do the whole thing yourself?
It was a little bit hard. I think we were forgotten, not by fault of anybody. I think just the chaos. We did actually have a volunteer that came over on about day 7, I think it was. So he did take my details, but because we were going backwards and forwards, I think we were just continuously missed. We were travelling through to Wairoa, which takes about just over an hour, but with the road being what it is at the moment, it was 2 hours there and 2 hours back. So, of course, when we get there at about 10:30 in the morning, we're trying to beat the heat because, of course, there's no windows open or anything, and it was just so hot in there. We would have a plan of being there for 2 hours, and that was it, because we knew when we came home, we still had to wash everything off. Because the silt, it wasn't just mud. It breached the banks at the showground, so it went through an entire showgrounds, as well as, I believe, 59 houses, which, of course, have septic tanks, chemicals, an industrial area. So all of those things were all mixed into the silt. Sorry, I've just totally lost track of the question, Marvidas.
With that silt is going to be around for a long time, and that's going to create quite a high background level of toxic dust that the community will be breathing in. How are we going to manage that?
I'm glad you said that, because one thing that I noticed with myself and Mum, we've been finding it really hard to breathe. I thought it was hay fever, but it really isn't. I mean, I sound good at the moment because I've had three hot drinks in the last hour to get ready for this meeting. But what I personally think is the flow-on effects from the cyclone are going to be far-reaching in regards to physical health. Another really, really major contributing or health issue that I think there will be is people's mental health. In terms of disaster, we really just focus on people's physiological needs and we forget how people are feeling, or that's sort of put to the side. I think there's going to be a lot of impacts on people's well-being and mental health to come, and I don't think it's going to be short term. I think it's going to be very long term.
Are there supports being put in place for that, particularly for the children who are having yet another disruption to their education, all of those children who don't have homes, the disruption to their familial relationships, to their friendships, like there's just, and then there was all that food security, those issues as well. There's just so many things for the kids to have to deal with.
What I believe in Wairoa at the moment, because they've actually closed some of the bus routes. There's a lot of children that aren't going to school, so I'd have to say no. I also believe that many families are actually going back into their homes, and that is without an inspector being in there. So it's really, really sad to see there's so many people going back into their homes because they just can't stay in a marae for whatever reason. So not going to school, going back into an unsafe structure.
There's so much wrong with that picture, isn't there?
Absolutely. And to be honest, I haven't heard of any support systems for children specifically. I'm not saying there isn't any, but I haven't heard of any.
As an educator, even though you're in the tertiary sector, but you're an educator, and so we care across the board, don't we? How do you think the schools are coping? Because I know that I've got a cousin who lives in the Wharieratas, and her children go to a school nearby where they live, but their school got flooded out, filled with silt, and so they're bussing them in to Wairoa for school every day. So how do you think the schools are coping? Like, what are you hearing from your colleagues, fellow educators?
What I'm hearing is that they're just really catering to their absolute basic needs. It's survival mode. Resources are limited. Staff are limited. Some staff are still actually stuck on the other side of Napier. So there's many people that haven't even returned to Wairoa. So there's all of those sorts of stresses as well. But I think it's really just back to the basics. Just do what you can, because when was the last Cyclone Bola was the last cyclone in Wairoa, and that was when the bridge actually wiped out. That was huge as well. But I think, me personally, this one here is worse. It's unbelievable. Probably because I'm more personally affected. I'm probably a little bit biased there. But, yeah, I think everyone's just running on survival mode. Fuel is still limited. You can still only get $40 fuel. So leaving Wairoa is probably not a good option if you want to get to Gisborne. If you're on a truck, for example, will you get there? In the first 10 days that we were driving backwards and forwards, you would not believe the amount of cars that we saw parked up on the side of the road. People are tired, they've had enough, and they're starting to venture out to say, hey, what's in Gisborne? And we know they're leaving. A lot of people are leaving, and they're saying, we'll go back later.
But will they go back, and what have they got to go back to? Those are the big questions in that scenario.
Absolutely. It's same with myself. I said to Mum, you know, we no longer have that place. We'd have to start again. Can I do my job from Gisborne effectively for our Wairoa community? And I've been jostling with that question for the last week, and my response to that would be, absolutely, I think I can. I know I can, actually. That's a big thing for me, because one thing that I really don't want to do is say, okay, we've experienced this tragedy, you know, this trauma. I'm okay now. I've got somewhere to live. Do I just leave them to it? I do not think that I could sleep with my, you know, within my own feelings and thoughts if I did that. I really do. I think I need to ramp it up a little bit more. We need to wrap services around our community in short-term help, in my opinion, it's a really nice thing. It's a lovely thought, but we need long-term support. We need a plan. We need a structured plan. And in saying that, I don't think that there is one. I haven't heard of one. So everything is still up in the air.
When we think of place as our identity and what we connect to and our safety and our relationships, and, you know, place is so important to our sense of well-being and belonging. And we've lost place before. 200 years ago, there was this mass stealing of land that resulted in us being homeless and not connected and losing that sense of place. And now we're seeing the same thing happen again, but it's the environment, this nature is taking it. Climate change is taking it. How do we keep people feeling connected and safe in their sense of where they belong? And that, it sounds to me, Lucky, like that's where you're at the moment too.
Absolutely. I have to say that I feel I am absolutely displaced. I'm actually from Gisborne originally. I moved to Wairoa 10 years ago to reconnect or connect with my father's side. So my father's buried there. Seven of my brothers were born in Wairau and three of us were born in Gisborne. And before my father passed away about 20 years ago, he said to us, he sat us all down and said, one of you has to move back to Wairau to take whatever skills that we have back there, because he believed as a tradie back in the 70s, that was a skill that was quite sought after and obviously still is today, and he wanted one of us to move back there. So, sorry, I'm a little bit lost again, Marwita.
No, that's okay. We're just talking about place and identity place. And connection.
Yeah, so I feel really displaced because I have recreated a whole new life for myself in Wairau. Coming back to Gisborne, it sort of feels like I'm taking a step back, and psychologically I'm trying to convince myself this is good for me. I never wanted to move back here. Maybe when I was in 20 years' time, when I was going to retire or what have you, but I didn't want to move back here. And having to move back here to me seems like it's forced. And it's not a comfortable feeling, but psychologically I'm convincing myself this is a good thing. I can do this, because you have to. Mm. You have to. Mm.
Lucky, we've talked about the children and education and families, but what about our kaumātua? How are they coping with the stress of all of this and their and losing their homes and the insecurity in their lives?
I'd probably like to talk about where I lived in Wairau. So I actually lived right next door to Age Concern. They were housed in the Wairau Bowling Club. So we had quite a lot to do with kaumātua because they lived just over, they were housed just over the fence. When we were packing and dumping and salvaging whatever we could from our property, I actually had a really good conversation with the manager of Age Concern, and I said to her, how are our nannies and our corals getting on? And she said to me, they're so overwhelmed, they're isolating. So what they were actually doing, because they were flooded, they were affected, they were actually going mobile. They had put whatever they could in their vehicle and they were going house to house. And I think that was probably a really good thing for them to do, because if kaumātua are isolating themselves, no one really knows how they are. Physically, of course, okay, they're home, you can knock on the door, they're there. But psychologically and emotionally, I don't really think you would know unless you sat down and allowed them to open themselves up. And by doing that in their homes, it would have given them a safe space to do that. In saying that, Is their home safe?
Yeah.
So affected, absolutely affected. I can also speak for my mum. Mum's very active. And for the first time in probably 25 years, she's having a nap during the day. She's just absolutely exhausted. She never naps. And she's having a nap as we speak. What we've been doing lately is we've just been talking. We've just been having little snapshots, I suppose. We're actually not talking about the flood. We're talking about everything, but we're planning. We're planning every single day. Okay, this is what we need to do. We're taking a chunk. Rather than say, okay, this is what we're going to do in 6 months, we're just doing it day by day. Let's try and get through this tomorrow. We've got a plan and we just think, okay, what is manageable? What is realistic? Let's prioritize. That's our plan, unofficial plan, we just came up with it, to just try and cope, is to not think about it. And of course it's still there, it's not going to go away, but it's a coping mechanism.
One of the things that I try and teach is that the best thing we can do with our kids is teach them how to think themselves into a future. And it sounds, because if you know where you're going, you need to be looking there. If you don't know where to look, then how do you know where you're going? It's like if you ride a bike and if you look off down the road, you're probably going to crash because you haven't got your eyes on where you're supposed to be. Is that what you guys are doing? Are you focusing on where you're going so that you just keep on moving forward?
Absolutely. One step in front is our plan. In saying that, they are just bite sizes at this point in time, but we're really just trying to move forward in a positive way. We did actually go off track a little bit the other day, and we started to think, oh, what did we leave there? You know, what could we have done different? And it wasn't productive. It was actually counterproductive. And I actually said to Mum, you know, let's not do that. We're out of there. We've walked away with as much dignity as possible. We've dumped our personal things so other members of the public didn't have to do that. And we're okay. So the thinking of the moment, in the moment, that's the plan, one step at a time.
That's a nice place to be. So in the face of everything that's happened, how is your mum and how are your mum's friends all doing?
Mum's actually okay. She's very tired physically, but I think emotionally she feels a little bit better because we have more access to facilities here. In Wairoa, whenever we were going there, it was just so restricting.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tāhoa hou. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. I really hope, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art. Perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last more than 3 years have been very tough. We've had to face so many new challenges, and it's so important that we give to ourselves and each other the love, the compassion, the time, the patience that we all so richly deserve. I know for myself that so much has changed over the last several years, and I'm having to learn so many new ways of making sure I'm caring for myself and balancing my energy. Having had this process of long COVID, it's really important that I make sure that I'm not taking on too much and then becoming very exhausted. And this, of course, is a difficult balancing act, as we all know. So I hope for you, whatever has arisen that you're having to learn, that you're giving yourself compassion and you're seeing how well you're doing, that you're feeling proud, that you're feeling accomplished, that you're feeling that you are making progress, which you are, in every moment, every day. It's also so important that we are aware that, of course, everybody around us is also moving through these new phases of being and learning. And so whether or not they're able to communicate what's happening for them, we give them the compassion, the time that they deserve too. And of course, my heart's home workplace, Orokanui Eco Sanctuary, always provides such a rich and nourishing environment to explore. And of course, we see in the forest all these different plants growing, sharing space, communicating with their mycelial networks under the ground and moving up towards the light together. It serves as a wonderful reminder, of course, of what we're all up to all the time, and that we can really help each other. That each of us is different, each of us is unique, but we have so many common needs and common skills. And if we can remember this and come together in that spirit of sharing and growth, so much as possible. So I really hope for you that in your environments every day, those around you are showing you new ways, new opportunities for you to express your myriad talents. I know for myself that having a beautiful home environment is very helpful. And I'm in the process of revolutionising and re-beautifying the Wu Mansion at the moment, which is very exciting. And just by making that space and seeing what is underneath everything has been really powerful. It's really felt like a new start. It's really felt like a revolution in every sense of the word. So hopefully you're having the opportunity to make the space around you really supportive, and you're having the time and the energy to care for yourself in the ways that you need. I know for myself that when I haven't been able to get the right balance and I'm feeling very tired, it is hard to do these things that we all need so that we can feel good and be our best selves. But again, being compassionate, being kind to ourselves, not berating ourselves. All these things are so important. So I hope that you're giving yourself lots of love and appreciation, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much for having me. A huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team and to all of you. Talk soon. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We are talking with Lucky Hawkins from Wairoa, who is in Gisborne.
Lucky, one of the important things to think about this in this situation is the resilience of the community. We, this event has happened. The last time it happened to this extent was Cyclone Bola back in 1988. But the message that we're getting from scientists is that this is going to be the first of, more events like it, and that we need to be better prepared. Do you think that the community can be better prepared? What does that look like?
Will we learn from this? I'd really like to think that we will. I think that, for example, the Wairoa District Council absolutely needs to have strategies. I absolutely know that we need to learn the absolute basics, getting out to the community in regards to communication. I believe the river actually breached at 6 o'clock in the morning. By the time it got to us, it was 20 past eight. Now, I think things would have been a whole lot different for the community if we had known at 6 o'clock that, look, hey, there's a strong possibility that the river's going to come and breach a whole side of Wairoa. I think it would have been absolutely different. We would have been able to pack up basics and head, to the hills. In saying that, there is a learning lesson, and what are we going to do about it? I think what really needs to happen is the community needs to get together, and we need to be heard. We need to be heard by the proper people, authorities, the council, for example. And how are we going to do that? We need to do that together.
Yeah.
We can't be divided. This is a time that we need to come together, and our resilience is our strength, our close-knit strength in small towns. This is our strength, our relationships with one another.
The same thing happened in the Edgecombe community when the Rangitaiki River burst its banks. Well, actually, the wall that protected the town gave way and the entire town flooded. And it was the same thing. The community recognised that the only way they were going to make sure they were safe going forward was if they stood together and took on the machine that is council and regional council. And so is there a corridor all around that now in the community? Are people getting ready for that conversation?
One way that I am staying connected with Wairoa, because I'm not physically there, is through social media. Everybody has an opinion right now, but we don't have any formal platform where we can come together. One thing I have noticed is that the council turns off comments whenever they're posting something. I don't know whether that is, whether they're shutting people down. I don't know. I feel it is. It's a strategy for them to, okay, we want to give this message, but we don't want you to comment on it just yet. We're overwhelmed. But the thing is, everybody is overwhelmed. Yeah. Everybody has the right to be heard. But we do need those sorts of we need a platform. We need some sort of platform where we can all come together to be heard. And we later is not okay. We need to be heard now.
That's right. Would that be your message to council if you had an ear into the council now? Is that what you would say? Give us a platform to be heard.
Absolutely, because it's timely. You know, in 2 or 3 weeks' time or 3 months' time, the stress would have somewhat come off. You know, it's not current. It's not timely. We need to be heard now. Change needs to happen now because it's so fresh in our minds. It's happening. It's current. And solutions need to be made so that we can learn from exactly what's happening now. Not 3 months' time when everything's subsided and people are back in their homes, hopefully. And things are in recovery mode and we can focus on, yay, you know, we've done this and we've done that. It's not so much what they've done, it's what they haven't done.
I have to say that Whakatane District Council certainly learned from Edgecombe. When that cyclone was forecast, the one that hurt you guys so badly, we had all kinds of warnings that it was coming and what the potential impact could be and to be prepared and to make sure we had a go bag. Like, we were given every warning under the sun because they learned their lesson from Edgecombe. It would be really good.
We've actually talked about that, my mother and I. I said to her, you know, believe it or not, I normally always have an emergency kit in my boot with everything in it, enough in there for about a week. And just as a one-off, I cleaned my car a few days ago and I took it out. So I suppose the learning lesson is just always be prepared. You just never know. We actually in Wairau, we weren't affected. I was actually saying to Mum at 8 o'clock that morning, oh, it was just all hype, Mum. You know, this was 20 minutes before we were flooded. Oh, it was just all hype. It's passed. And lo and behold, the siren went off at just after 8 o'clock. And within half an hour, we were being evacuated out of the house.
Wow.
So we really do have to be prepared. If there's any learning from this, we need to be prepared.
Yeah, so that's what community resilience looks like, isn't it? It's that preparedness.
Exactly. I think better communication as well, communication in whatever way. Having an hour compared to having 5 minutes, it's life-changing.
Absolutely.
It really is. Mm. If we had have known at six, you know, everybody could say shoulda, woulda, coulda, but we didn't. Why didn't we know? You know, was it to stop people from panicking? I have no idea. I suppose that's really a question we need to ask the council.
Lucky, you said that change needs to happen now, and that's really important on those things that we can fix on the ground. Do you think that the community is ready to discuss the bigger changes, the things related to a discussion about climate change and social justice and decolonisation, or is all of that just way too abstract at the moment?
I think at this given time, probably not. I think everyone's still in recovery mode. Yeah, so probably not. I know for myself, absolutely, bigger picture stuff, we absolutely do need to have those conversations, but I don't think that they're ready to have that conversation just yet.
You are, in your doctoral work, looking at the community and what the impacts that have been on it over the long term, the sort of the long-term effects of colonisation and removal of education services and changes in land use on the community and all that sort of stuff. And now there's been this massive change. Do you think are people thinking it's going to be a return to business as usual, or is it going to be a business as something else?
I think everybody wants to believe that it's going to be business as usual, and I think they want to believe, because everybody's trying to be positive, that with enough grants and enough help and enough outside support systems that things will return to the way they were. I personally think that is okay to a point, but we need to amend, we need to adjust, we need to be ready. Like you were saying, Marwita, preparedness, we need to have plans, we need to have strategies. It's okay to return to normal as such, but we need to have some sort of system in place to run alongside this new normal. There is going to be a new normal. The old normal, it no longer exists. And I think trying to get back to that, it's not realistic. We need a new normal. And
can the new normal be better than the old normal?
I absolutely think that it can, in regards to learning from the past.
Yeah.
And I think if let's just say this happened again in 5 years, I think whatever we have learnt, like you were saying, Marwita, Whakatane learnt from Edgecombe, we should have learnt from this. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because it's not going to be this again. Well, let's hope it's not this particular thing again. It's going to be something different. So that absolutely. Resilience has got to be about the community working together, not just being resilient by fixing that technical problem.
That's right. That is the strength in small communities is the fact that we are close-knit. We all do get in there and we muck in for everybody. You know, it is very, very close-knit in Wairau as it is in all small rural towns. But I think that's going to be our strength to recovery.
So when we talked last, you said that teaching is not happening, the tertiary teaching is not happening for this semester at least. Has any progress been made on what's happening with education in Wairau?
Tertiary education?
Yeah. The sort of stuff you do.
The courses that I oversee are definitely not happening until July. And I also believe that EIT, the Eastern Institute of Technology, who is the most significant tertiary provider in Wairau, that they are more or less on a soft start, if that makes sense. So they've started their courses, but they're not expecting a lot, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Another thing to follow up on from last time, when we talked last time, you talked really beautifully about the going to the beach and having an ice cream, and that knowing that that was what you needed to do at the time and that's what worked for you. And we commented that it was interesting that that kind of stuff isn't in the civil defence handbooks. What's working now?
When we were at the beach, just eating an ice cream and just not talking. It was great. It was just time to not so much reflect, but breathe and not even digest what's happening. Just be calm. Come down from the adrenaline rush. And now we're definitely over the adrenaline rush. We're actually sore. We're feeling all of our aches and pains now. And how are we coping with that? We're tired. How are we coping with being tired? I am actually having a wellness 2 days. I'm going for a massage with mum. We're getting a pamper, we're getting a mani-pedi. So we're going to start looking after ourselves physically so that our emotionally, that should follow. I'm really looking forward to that, actually.
That sounds like a good thing that we should all learn from. Okay, before we finish, let's squeeze in the Wairoa song. I was going to say why this one, but that's kind of obvious. What's the story behind this song?
So I wasn't there personally at the launching of the song. We have a local musician called Kitty Gilbert who works for Kahununu Executive. He's absolutely wonderful. He does so much for the community. He wanted to compose a song which was, for lack of better words, an anthem to uplift the people, to bring the people together. And he wanted to use the lighthouse as a beacon of light for, which Wairoa was known for, of course, the lighthouse, as a beacon of light for us to all join together for a positive reason. So he wrote a song and he contacted New Zealand On Air. They supported him in writing and composing and presenting the song. And I believe there were in excess of 500 people on the day that turned up to help sing the song. And it was wonderful. Yeah. It's about 6 minutes long, but I think it's great. It has so much history in there. The footage in there is absolutely awesome. It's a real testament to what one person can do in a small community. It really is.
When you're alone.
you think they're going to have to write some new verses for it, or is it, do those messages still work and still resonate?
Oh, they absolutely still resonate. Yeah. What that song means to me is that we can do it together. That's what that song means to me. If we all come together as one, we can achieve anything. That's what that song means to me.
That's quite a nice message, the mix of those two messages, the one person making the difference with everyone coming together.
Absolutely, absolutely. And whether it's to record a song or what have you, I think it's just that is a clear example of what we really need to do. Come together with a common goal in mind, and we can achieve anything.
Lucky, in the face of so much stress and anxiety and concern for the future, you've still got an amazing smile and you're still being a support for everyone around you and for your mum and for your colleagues and your community. And I have so much admiration for you, for the goodness that you bring to a space where goodness is definitely in short supply. Thank you for the commitment that you've made to making things better for others. Kia ora.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucky. Thank you very much for joining us. Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio weekday afternoons at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie in honour of Lucky's Ice Cream at the Beach. This is Tom Waits' Ice Cream Man. I'm Samuel Mann, with Mawira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined from Wairoa but in Gisborne by Lucky Hawkins. That was Blowing Bubbles by Sustainable Lens. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mati wa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.